Welcome to an open house meeting with John Sherman, broadcast live from Ojai, California, on June 12, 2013.
Hello, everybody. This is John. Thank you for being here. It's always a pleasure to come here on Wednesdays. I'm going to begin by speaking about a recent I think it's a recent posting in the Anon Talk, but it may be a posting in the forum. It is a posting in the forum. The title of it is Looking Ordinary or Wondrous? I would welcome some clarity on the act of looking. We hear John saying many times, quote, look for what's permanent, what's always here, what never changes, never departs, unquote. And also, quote, if it wasn't here a minute ago and it is here now, you can be sure that in the next minute it'll be gone again and it isn't you. The writer goes on, that seems obvious enough, but now I ask, doesn't this advice conflict with John's further statement saying, quote, this glimpse of reality is so ordinary that one's attention upon it is brief and fleeting, the mind being unable or disinclined to sustain continuous attention, unquote. The writer goes on, therefore, doesn't this brief tenth of a second glimpse of something that wasn't here a minute ago qualify it as being impermanent and therefore not me? And if so ordinary, why does John on another occasion say that looking at this shining presence is so wondrous a thing to be doing that you find yourself wanting to do it all the time and is pretty much all you want to do? Okay. Couple things about this. There's a couple things, couple points I want to make here. One is that I'm not all that skilled at extemporaneous speaking. And because I'm not all that skilled at it, I tend to ramble and backtrack and sometimes I don't make much sense in the things I'm saying. I am aware of that, and I am even now embarked upon a determination to be more direct and succinct and so forth and not ramble quite so much, although I probably will continue to ramble for some time yet. So that there are things that I have said in the past that I would not say today. That's the other thing. That's another thing. There are things I have said in the past that I would not say today. It seems to be difficult for some folks to understand that what we have found here is not something that has been transmitted to us by a spiritual teaching or a spiritual teacher or by the Word of God coming down. It's not something that's been transmitted to us at all. It's something that we have spent 14 years in the work of trying to understand just what it is that we want to talk about, just what it is that actually occurred in our own lives, just what it is that would be useful to communicate with people in an effort to give people the possibility of finding out what we already found out. So in the beginning of that 14 years, everybody should kind of take a breath here. When we first started back in 1999 at our first meeting, and for some time, what we were doing was satsang. That's what we called it. I'd never felt comfortable with it, but that's what we called it. And that was the structure and the presentation that we used to in our meetings with people. You know, the Dharma bell, the the pictures of Ramana, Gangaji, that whole thing. And although we, from the very beginning, realized that what had actually happened to us and what we actually wanted to communicate to people was outside the realm of satsang, doesn't have anything to do with any judgment about spiritual teaching or satsang or anything else, but it was just outside the realm of satsang, and what we were doing all that time was trying to figure out how to talk about it. But our vocabulary, or my vocabulary, Carl is smarter than I am, my vocabulary was locked into the way of relating things that was current in the prevailing vernacular in the satsang community and in the non-dual community in general. So that, and I don't know if I have said this recently, but when I used to say, look for what's permanent, what's always here, what never changes, what never departs, that was before I actually knew what it was that I wanted you to look at. So the only thing I had to go on were the things that I had acquired myself from Gangaji, from Papaji, from Ramana, and others that I had respect for. So that thing about what's permanent, what's always here, never changes, never departs, and so forth and so on, actually that was a long since discarded, not useful way of speaking about what it is that I want you to look at. And because of that, it actually does seem to conflict with the following thing, although in my own experience it doesn't conflict with it because of my own experience of what I was trying to do all along. The second thing he mentions is this glimpse of reality is so ordinary that one's attention upon it is brief and fleeting, the mind being unable or disinclined to sustain continuous attention. Now, we could parse these two statements in a way that they both fit in the same point of view. But there's no need really to do that. The truth is that the most salient and interesting and important suggestion that I made in those two statements was the second one, which is the case. It is the case that the feeling of me, what you would call the feeling of, you would call it the feeling of me too, the feeling of me isn't very interesting. It doesn't move. It's so ordinary. One's attention upon it is brief and fleeting because the mind's unable or disinclined to sustain not just continuous attention. It's not the mind conditioned by the fear has a great deal of time, great deal of trouble with continuous attention. But even without that handicap, this feel of me is so nothing. I mean, it doesn't do anything. It doesn't move. It doesn't have any color or shape or taste. It has a very faint little taste, but not much. So that the reason for suggesting that to people is to assure them that the fact that they cannot hold attention on the feeling of me is of no consequence. Really is not. It simply is beside the point. The looking itself literally takes less than a tenth of a second, and it is so brief and so fleeting, and the object of its search is so unremarkable that it doesn't stay there for long. The glimpse is fleeting. Not you. It's the glimpse that's fleeting. Not you. And If so ordinary, the writer asks, why does John on another occasion say that looking at this shining presence is so wondrous a thing to be doing that you find yourself wanting to do it all the time and it's pretty much all you want to do? Well, that's a little over the top, I guess. I got a little carried away. Sometimes I get a little, I make attempts at being a little poetic in the things that I say. And that's a little over the top. But the truth is that once the fear is gone, there is not a moment when you are not aware of your presence here in the background of everything. That's the case. You may not attend to it. You may find, because it's not very interesting, there's not much point to attending to it much. But it is the fear, the noise and smoke and fire of the fear that can, that pretty much without exception, except for in the event of an intentional effort to do so, it's pretty much impossible to have the sense of the field of view in a space that is filled with the business of the fear. Now, so that my experience and what seems to be the experience of more people as time goes on, my experience now is that you actually are never not aware of you, yourself. Although the bare awareness does not necessarily lead to conscious perception. Once the process of regeneration is complete, you will regain conscious perception of the feel of you as the background of all experience. That feel is present all the time. It is just drowned out by the noise of the products of the fear. So, and the even more important in all of that is understanding that what we are about here is an exploration and an investigation and an adventure into a realm that has been closed to us in the past, the realm of the actual direct engagement with life as it unfolds. And the ways of speaking about this and the ways of speaking about the results and how they have an effect on my day-to-day awareness of life and so forth, that is constantly in the process of development. There is nothing whatsoever that I have ever said or that I ever will say that should be carved in stone. This is a conversation that's going on. It's been going on for 14 years. And we have made a great leap since 2010 to the point where we have a very clear understanding of what needs to be done. We have a very clear understanding of how the outcome of that looking unfolds. And we are gaining greater understanding, mostly because of the conversations going on in the forums. We're attaining a greater understanding of what happens next and what it means to human beings and so forth and so on. So that this is a living thing. This is not a doctrine. So that parsing the things that are said, thinking that the things that are said are the final word on the subject, is kind of cheating yourself. The best way to understand what the looking is about, the best way to grow an understanding of what it means to our relationship with our lives and what that means to ourselves and the world as a whole, is to join the conversation that is in progress. It's a living thing. It's not doctrine. It's not dead. It's alive. And it's present in the level of conversation in those forums is a thing to behold. and to participate in. So rather than trying to find out what the single key element in all of this is so that you can take it for yourself and go away with it, join the conversation. The important questions don't have to do with whether I have or have not whether I have or have not contradicted myself and from one point to the other. I guarantee you that I have contradicted myself more times than you can imagine. But I'm learning. And I'm learning from this conversation. And the conversation is where the understanding is developing. Not in parsing this thing that somebody said or that thing that somebody said. This is a living, this is alive. And as to the wondrousness of the feel of you, well, it really is quite sweet. And it's not very strong, and doesn't call attention to itself, and it's not rock and roll. But it is really quite sweet. And you will come to, not to rest in it, or to go there to feel better, but you'll always be aware of it. And when nothing else is going on, what continues to go on is the presence of you. And you'll see that for yourself. And no amount of talk and no amount of argumentation, no matter how eloquent they may be, can possibly give you that. You must look. You must seek to understand for yourself what has happened to you in your life and what the looking has given you. You must utilize the incredible resource that these forums have become to those who are involved in this work. So I hope that's helpful. I am pretty much finished, I think. So, must be your turn. Anybody want to talk to me, just do what Carla told you. It's good to be here with you. Christopher, you still want to talk? I see now that I had my microphone muted when I called on you. Well, there you are.
Yes, I heard all your initial comments and much appreciated them, but I did have one or two thoughts as you were speaking, and if it's okay, I would just mention one or two thoughts that came up for me. You covered a lot of territory, and I really appreciated how clearly you spoke. I have to tell you, I'm not very good verbally myself. I do better at writing, but I have a go at it. But one thing you said toward the end, briefly, that the point really isn't to rest in the experience of looking at oneself. And I just wanted to respond to that, John, because, perhaps we each, because we are each an individual, perhaps the way that we each experience this process does vary a little bit from one person to another. But I would have to say that in my experience of this process, that I wouldn't say it's necessarily the reason that I like to look at myself, and yet I wouldn't say that it's not. I enjoy, feeling that here's a peaceful a peaceful presence in my life. I mean, I really do enjoy and sort of celebrate that. So that was comment number one. And comment number two, adding to that, I have an idea that although on the face of it, as you say, perhaps nothing too interesting happens, yet I have a notion that as I persevere or continue with this looking, that my capacity to sense the little nudges of my heart or my inner voice, so to speak, that the ability for that, I rather think, is nurtured by my experience of looking. So these were just some thoughts that came up. I just wanted to share with you.
A couple things. One is that I don't say you shouldn't. That you shouldn't look at yourself whenever you feel like it. I mean, that just simply is not, it's not my business to suggest to anyone how they should relate to themselves in a mind that's free of fear. I can only talk about what my own experience is, and my own experience is that, as I said at the end of that response, my own experience is that there never is a moment when that faint feel of me is not in my awareness, and I can turn to it or not turn to it, but there's never a moment when it goes away. And sometimes I am aware of his presence, sometimes it's in the background and I'm not paying any attention to it. But there's certainly nothing wrong with any of that. There's no, like I said, it's not my business to tell people how they should relate to themselves in a mind free of fear. The other thing I want to say is that in my experience, as time goes on, in the beginning of the regeneration, there's a regeneration going on in my psychology as well as everybody else's who undertakes this act. And that regeneration is still taking place in my life, although I've been with this for quite a long time now. But during the period of confusion, when, you know, like not the big confusion, when the fear is in control of the environment and so forth, but in the period of the confusion of the unwinding and all of that stuff that goes on, my experience was that it was not uncommon for me to mistake effects for causes. Like, for example, the feeling that I want to go rest in the feeling of me, is that an effect of something else? That's not exactly what I'm trying to say. The thoughts about my relationship with the experience of me, are they effects or are they causes of anything? My sense of it now is that they are effects. They are effects of the whole regeneration process and the opening up of attention and conscious attention and so forth to a wider range of experience and a more subtle range of experience, and that the feel of me is pure sensation. It's not strong, but it's pure sensation. It has no content to it at all, except its feel. The perception of that occurs within the psychology itself. The perception of that as being something to seek after or not to seek after, something to rest in or not to rest in, something to find strength from or not to find strength from, those are all aspects of the perception of that ever-present faint feel of me here. So that in retrospect, from my point of view, what I see now is that much that I thought to be what's the word I'm looking for? Volition. Volitionary acts, volitionary understandings and so forth, actually turned out to be just part of the regeneration process going on. So that when there was a time when I thought, oh my God, all I want to do now is just sit here and rest in this, this not silence, but this clarity. As time went on, that impulse disappeared. My ability and my experience of the presence of me didn't go away. It is always here, but the impulse to seek it out just disappeared. Now, I'm not saying that that's the case for everyone, but I am saying that it's useful to see that sometimes the things we think are volitional are not volitional at all, but mere artifacts of the psychology, the psychological structure and mechanism and so forth that is under repair, so to speak. Does that make any sense whatsoever?
Oh, yes, that's very helpful, John. Thank you very, very much.
Okay.
And if I may finish up, just want to express deep thanks for what you and Carla offer.
You're very welcome. Well, thank you, too. You're a big part here. Okay?
Thank you.
Okay, anybody else? Once again, no pressure. No need to talk, but if you want to talk, this is the time, because I'm here, and happy to spend time with you. Pam? Hi, Pam.
Hi. You know, this is just a little comment. When you say, look at yourself, that's almost implies a visual experience. And in actuality, to me, it's more like, feel yourself. Because it is a sensation. It's an actual physical sensation that includes your vision, but it's more than finding something outside of yourself. It's, you are indeed here, and it's your presence, which is a physical reality also. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, right. Oh, and that's what I'm asking you to look at. I'm asking you to look at that sensation. Look is an interesting verb. It does not necessarily require thinking of it as a visual experience, although there are certain aspects of the looking that have a kind of a visual taste to them. But the reason that we settled on look at yourself is because it's a big field, and you can use look in a number of different ways, and also the implication of the using the verb look is has nothing whatsoever to do. It's like I said in the response to this guy, the glimpse is fleeting. You are not. So to look at yourself has nothing whatsoever to do with any implication that sometimes you're here and sometimes you're not here, or you got to look somewhere else for yourself other than here. Look at yourself. The implication of it is that you should seek the direct experience of the sensation of you. And what happens when we go into other forms of that is that things get too sharply focused. Like, people have to find their own way. And in your case, the way you found to the direct experience of the feeble of you is more easily understood by you in the manner you just said. And there's nothing wrong with that. I think there's probably an almost infinite number of ways that you can, points of view from which you can speak about this. But we stuck with look because it seems not so specific and not so constrained. Look includes whatever you want it to include, that is the actual movement to try to get the direct taste of the field of view. So I'm not saying, oh no, you're wrong and I'm right, but I'm saying that look is a broader, has a broader spectrum of application. Do you follow that?
I do. I just feel, and it is kind of a personal thing, I think. It has to do with where you're focused or what your focus is, what you feel most strongly.
It has to do with the idiosyncratic nature of the individual who enters into this, and I don't argue with any of that, okay?
I don't mean to argue either. I didn't mean to say that there was a right or wrong to it, but there is a kind of a subtlety to it, I think, for me. And it is kind of the way you describe things in your own language or your own experience. That's all.
That's what I'm saying, yeah. But yeah, that's what I said. I think everything is just fine, right?
Absolutely. No, I truly didn't want to make it sound as if I was saying that you were wrong or anything. It's just a very, I think it's just a really individual experience. And hard to share sometimes because it does come through your individuality.
The understanding of it is individualized and entirely unique to the individual that is approaching it. The ways of speaking about it, if you speak about it with your friends and family and so forth, that too is going to be determined by your individual way of speaking about what you know because you have done it and seen the results of it. But our job is different than that. Our job is to try to get, you know, like along with the continuing conversation such as this one that helps us clarify and have greater, deeper understanding of what we're about here. And by us, I mean the entire community. This is not, you know, this thing is alive, like I said. But our job is to get a simple enough, universally comprehensible enough, short, simple way of suggesting to people to do this act. And so that's what we've settled on. And actually it's had pretty good success. But it's, you know, it's like, yeah. Each individual human mind is entirely unique. There's no question about it. The actuality of the nature of the problem, the actuality of the, and it, very particular, the actuality of the actual experience of you is not so idiosyncratic. It pretty much sticks the same. But anyway, I never thought you were arguing with me, Pam. That never crossed my mind. I'm really happy to hear from you, and all of these things are helpful. Okay?
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, no, I just joining in.
Good to have you here. Okay? Anything else, Pam?
I'm just listening.
Okay. So we'll move to Don now. Don Wolf.
I have someone who predates you in your viewpoint, my mother. And this is a true story. One day when I was about 8, we had spent the day playing stickball and hide-and-seek, Ringolivio. You're from the East Coast, so you know about Ringolivio. And I came home filthy from head to toe. My mother wouldn't let me in the door until I took off my shoes. And when I got in, she looked at me. You know what she said? Quote, "Will you just look at yourself?"
Don, let me tell you something. When we came up with that phrase,
yeah.
that was the main thing that we thought was so cool about it. That's what moms always say.
always.
You just look at yourself.
Always. That, along with the various starvation in other places. And, that's true. And, of course, later on in life, the inevitable, look, if something should happen, there's a metal box with papers under the bed.
Well, I missed out on that one.
No, I'm just saying.
I was short of all my family long before.
Yeah, that's true in your life. But to look at yourself, think, I must have heard 1,000 times. You know, okay, that's basically it. What I wanted to say, though, more to the point, I always had a little bit of a problem with the idea that, and maybe I'm misconstruing your viewpoint, I sort of got the initial impression from the looking that your viewpoint was sort of one size fits all. And what you just said sort of clears that up, because we all have different temperaments, tendencies, idiosyncrasies. So maybe one size does fit all, but the process works differently within each individual is what I'm trying.
Oh, absolutely. That's the glory of individual minds. It's entire. They're entirely idiosyncratic, unpredictable. You know, the development of a human personality is served by a vast range of idiosyncratic understandings, points of view, and so forth and so on, desires and aversions, and all of that. And it's that idiosyncratic nature. It's like not like, oh my God, we are all one, and everybody's the same. And all we have to do is just sit and chant the Om. Nothing wrong with Om, but all we have to do is do that because everybody's exactly the same. All we have to do is just get rid of our personality and our differentness and our idiosyncratic nature and rest in the undifferentiated ocean of existence, I guess. But it's much more fun to be alive. It's much more fun to see the interplay and the way in which the infinitely different ways in which human existence plays out and reveals itself. And it's going to be a lot more fun when we're all rid of the thing that causes most of what we do to be done in order to protect me against you or to keep you from protecting yourself against me. But it's the idiosyncrasy that is the wonder. And that's why the instruction itself is as spare as I can possibly make it. It's intended to be not rejected by anybody because of idiosyncratic development of the personality and so forth. And it's spare. It's nothing to it. Look at yourself. See what it feels like to be you. Don't worry about all the rest of it. So, yeah, right. Idiosyncrasy is a wonderful thing. So, okay. Anything else?
Well, I just want to say, you know, that... I do believe that we all come from the same source, make of that what you will, but once we are manifested as individuals, it's a hell of a ride.
And, you know, there's no, like, here's the thing about all of that same source business, and I'm not trying to dispute you, Don, because we do all come from the same source, and so does the earth and the sky and the sun and the toads and the algae and everything else, water and space and time and everything comes from the same source. But that's just not, that aspect of it no longer holds much interest to me. That's like a given. There's no particularity, granularity to it that attracts interest and attention and so forth. But yeah, I agree with you. We all come from the same source, and there are not two of us who are identical. Not even, I've been reading a book, which I'll someday talk about probably, and talking about the fact that Siamese twins, have a completely idiosyncratic psychologies, and they are completely aware of which parts of the body are theirs and which parts of the body are the other ones. Their likes and dislikes, their ways of seeing the world are entirely idiosyncratic. It's just the nature of the beast. It's a complicated mechanism, human psychology is. It's a complicated mechanism, and I think you could go on for as many iterations as it needs without ever repeating itself. In fact, it changes changes from day to day, from moment to moment. It's always in motion. Right?
Yeah, one last thing. I agree. The moment-to-moment thing, even in itself, an individual doesn't necessarily reiterate. There's so many variations.
Variety is the spice of life.
You made that up. That's an old proverb you just made up. Thanks, John.
Okay, Don. Anybody else? We got a couple minutes here. Okay. I would like to ask you, and I see that it's just popped up again, I would like to ask you if you can to be at the meeting on this Sunday. I'm going to make an effort to communicate my view of the relationship between the looking and spirituality in a way that we don't ever have to go back to it again. I don't know if I'm good enough to do that, but I'm going to try. We have bigger fish to catch, bigger fish to fry, bigger whatever to find than to hold on to any confusion about the actual nature of what we're doing here and the way in which it is has nothing whatsoever to do with spiritual work at all. And I'm going to talk about why it seems that way and why it's not that way. So if you can make it, please do. I'm going to leave right now. Carla has some things to say. I love you all. I am really grateful for your presence in this work. I'm really grateful for your presence in our life. There would be nothing going on apart from you.
You just listened to an open house meeting with John Sherman, broadcast live from Ojai, California, on June 12, 2013. For more live recordings, visit our podcast at www.justoneloop.org.